I'm Rachel New, and I am literally on my last legs in the wild throes of perimenopause, like millions of other women in the UK and worldwide.
Being 15, 16, and you're seeing all of your friends going through these things, you're seeing all of your friends starting their periods and getting boobs and all that sort of thing, and it's not happening to you, and it is a strange thing to go through, and I didn't have that traditional rite of passage.
This podcast is going to lift the lid on that whole messy, confusing journey with plenty of WTFs and lols along the way.
Really, the only thing they can do, I suppose, for your body functioning is HRT. So I've been on that since I was about 16.
Our guest this week on My Last Eggs is Amy Benny, the chairperson of the DAISY Network, who support women with POI, premature ovarian insufficiency. Hi, Amy. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for coming on. It's a real pleasure to speak to you. So explain what POI is, first of all, for people who don't understand it.
Yeah. So POI, premature ovarian insufficiency. It's, I suppose that's kind of a broad term for the condition. And in layman's terms, it basically is a premature menopause where the ovaries stop functioning sort of years, if not decades, before the natural age of menopause, which is around 52. It can happen for a variety of reasons. A lot of women have had cancer treatments which have affected their ovaries. It can be due to sort of endometriosis or having the ovaries actually removed. But for the majority of women, it's actually just spontaneous. It happens for no reason. So basically your ovaries just stop working or stop responding, so as they would in the menopause. Sort of as a consequence of that, you're not ovulating, you're not producing estrogen, so yeah, your ovaries basically go into the same state as they are in menopause, but obviously it's happened years before it should naturally happen.
And for you, this happened at 15,
yeah,
which is 15. Almost when you've only just gone into puberty, you've only just begun that journey into having those hormones. Tell me how you found out about that, how it manifested itself to begin with, how you even knew there was anything to be investigated.
So you're right in that it happened, I suppose, before I'd even really gone through puberty. And I think that's part of the reason that we actually found out I had this, was because that really wasn't happening. My body was quite delayed in terms of, for my age, sort of development through puberty, and I didn't start my periods at all. And again, getting to 15 and not starting your periods, you know, I've got an older sister and she started really young, I think about 11. So my mum was just like, this isn't quite right, you know, I think something, you know, you should have probably started by now, there should be some sort of changes going on. And me reluctantly being, you know, a stroppy teenager, didn't want to go to the doctors, didn't want to be embarrassed. Mum drags me along, you know, like, yeah, 15, it is, you know, getting to the age you should have started, but we'll give it till 16. You might, because I was really small in height then as well. And they said, you know, it could just be one of those things where you are just a slow developer. But yeah, 16 came, still nothing. Went back to the doctors, and that's when they sort of went into the investigations of blood tests and that sort of thing. But really, it was just the lack of periods that was what made that sort of was the red flag, I think. But also from about the similar age, a couple of things happened in terms of, I got chronic anxiety, like really crippling anxiety, to the point that actually for a lot of years I struggled even sort of going outside without having a panic attack. And now looking back, I think that was probably a hormonal thing. And also another thing to note, which at the time, again, it's sort of later on, you put these things together, I got a lot of hyperpigmentation, so sort of darker tan patches all over my abdomen and some on my arms. And actually, that can be a hormonal or an autoimmune sort of trigger, but it's just, you know, later on putting those things together that they all happen sort of at a similar time. So yeah, that's really how I ended up getting diagnosed with it, was after those blood tests. Yeah.
How did that feel? I mean, what, because at 15, obviously you're not thinking, oh, I'm imminently about to have a baby, but it's just in our psyche, isn't it? I'm guessing those are the first thoughts, is I'm not going to have a baby.
For me, it actually wasn't, because I think it was for my mum. My mum was very upset at the diagnosis, I think, because she could see sort of the bigger picture, where at 15, 16, when you get told this, I kind of just was like, deal with that when the time comes. Like right now, you know, I've got GCSEs going on, I've got a life going on. Like, I'm not going to sort of get myself hung up on fertility side of things because it just seemed so far away. And in a way, I think I didn't let myself kind of go there. I didn't let myself kind of consider that side of things. I kind of put blinkers on and was like, not going to think of that. But there was sort of times along the way where it would suddenly hit me, and I would get very upset about it and realize, yeah, this isn't normal. I'm not going to be able to do things the normal way, because like you say, it is just one of those things that you kind of expect. You kind of expect when you're older, you're going to have children, you're going to have a family. And it was always something that I kind of just assumed would happen. So it does, it kind of totally shifts, I would say, the idea of what your life's going to look like. But again, at that initial diagnosis stage, I didn't really let myself go there. I just kind of blocked it out and thought, I'll deal with that in, you know, 10 years time or whatever, because right now that's kind of not relevant to me.
What, if any, is the treatment hormonally? Because obviously, you know, you're a woman and you need estrogen, as we do, you know, for so many different aspects of our health and our well-being and to function normally. So what did they do when they discovered that you had POI?
The first point of call really is to get estrogen levels up to where they should be. Again, because I hadn't really even finished going through puberty, my estrogen levels were so low, which again was why I hadn't started my periods. I hadn't really got much breast development and that sort of thing. What they did again was really they put you on HRT, so to speak. So at the beginning, I was on like a low level dose of estrogen that they sort of gradually built up. And that's when I grew in height. Within a year or two, I went from being 5'2" to nearly 5'7". So it was a massive growth spurt, you know, that obviously my body had been waiting for. And then I was actually put on the contraceptive pill. And I was on that for about 10 years. And again, that's just a way of, I think because I was so young, that's sort of an accessible, easy way to get those hormones that you need. That's what they can do, I suppose, to get your body to function as everybody else's is. They really want your levels to be the equivalent of another 16-year-old girl or another 20-year-old girl. So they have to keep tweaking it all along. But really, the only thing they can do, I suppose, for your body functioning is HRT. So I've been on that since I was about 16.
Do you think you didn't really have a puberty? I mean, you know, we all think about puberty of door slamming and being difficult and rebelling, but also these physical changes that happen to our body that they're a bit alien, aren't they? We don't really know what's going on. Did you kind of not really experience that until you had the hormones?
Yeah, no, I didn't. It started like I did have low levels of estrogen. It was kind of as if I'd started going through puberty and then something had happened and it stopped. So I suddenly got POI and that stopped going any further. So no, I didn't really. And I think, again, being 15, 16 and you're seeing all of your friends going through these things, you're seeing all of your friends starting their periods and getting boobs and all that sort of thing. And it's not happening to you. And it is a strange thing to go through. And I didn't have that traditional sort of rite of passage sort of thing of going through puberty and, you know, having those conversations with your friends about starting your periods and all that sort of thing. I associated my body with not working properly and kind of being looked at medically kind of thing rather than sort of embracing the changes and stuff. It was kind of like getting monitored by doctors and things. So it totally changes the way that you go through that and the way that you look at your own body and going into like womanhood, I suppose. Yeah.
And what's interesting is, you know, now other rites of passage you're not going to get to go through, you know, having your own biological baby and actually going through the menopause, although you've gone through the menopause, you're also not going to have that sort of stage of life, which feels like the beginning of a new chapter. So you really, really missing out on all of those things, aren't you?
I suppose because I've dealt with it since I was so young, I've kind of come to terms now with what my path looks like. I can understand that if you'd gone through POI sort of, you know, in your 20s or 30s, when you're at that point of trying to conceive a baby, I feel like actually having it so young is kind of, I know what my future's going to look like rather than it being a complete shock. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it is. It's one of those things where I've always known having a biological child is not going to be a possibility for me. I mean, there is some like a 5% chance that it can happen naturally, but again, that's so slim. That's, you know, I don't even really entertain that statistic. And yeah, again, going through menopause at the actual age, you know, again, that's going to be something where all of my friends will be going through and talking about their hot flushes and talking about all that sort of stuff. And actually, I won't be involved in that. Well, I might be if I'd stopped taking my HRT and things, but it's one of those things where there is those stages of life that you go through as a woman that, yeah, my path looks totally different.
So you'll know this better than me, but in around 10% of cases, they can attribute it to something. Autoimmune illness can cause it. Diabetes might cause it, and some other illnesses, and then some treatments, you know, cancer treatment and lots of things can cause it. But in 90% of cases, which I'm assuming you're in this 90%, they literally have no idea.
Absolutely.
Why this happens. And I think about that and I just think, why? I'm no doctor and I realise that there's a lot of medical issues to be solved. But is anybody doing any research into this? What's going on with this? Is it increasing? Yeah. You know, is it something in the way we live, our environment? Like why is this happening?
There is research going on as to what is causing this. And there's a study on genomes where they're getting the genetics of massive proportion of women with POI. To find out if there is some sort of genetic code in that, actually, they haven't realised yet that could trigger it off. But like at the moment, there is no reason, there is no cause. You know, I had every blood test, every scan, skin punctures and all sorts to test all the layers of my skin and everything. And there's no cause. So on paper, really, there's nothing wrong with me. But obviously there has to be, because why would this happen, you know? So it is, I think that's one of the real frustrating things for a lot of women with POI, is that like, why does it happen to certain people? And like you say, there will be research you know, in the future that will probably hopefully explain more about this. And I know that is going on behind the scenes, but you know, we don't know how long this research is going to take. It's kind of a longitudinal study, so it could take a long time to find out. But yeah, the fact that 90% of women go through this and they don't know why, and it's never attributed to anything, is part of the frustration.
Time now for a little something that I've been cooking up while lying awake for hours at night with insomnia. I think you're probably all going to know this tune. I have found for you the most horrendous instrumental. Let's all enjoy this together, girls. Here we go. Brain fog, aching joints, itchy feet and dry eyes, dizzy spells, constant weeping, endless bloody rage. Muscle tension, burning mouth, mood swings, hair loss, a new moustache, anxiety, vaginal atrophy. It's all right, this bit, isn't it? Bleeding gums, sore tits, brittle nails, look like shit, headaches, insomnia and stress incontinence. Palpitations, fatigue, what the fuck is wrong with me? Pins and needles, restless legs, smelly discharge, weight gain. Please don't stop the fire. I'm already burning and my stomach's churning. Please don't stop the fire. I've got no libido and I've gained 10 kilos. I haven't got any more words for this bit, but I do like the pan pipe, so let's just sit with those a minute, girls. Might be calming, just what we need. Time now to head back to Amy Benny. Tell me a bit about your work with the DAISY Network and the charity generally, and how you got involved with that and what the DAISY Network does.
When I was diagnosed, I was never told really the terminology of what my condition was. I was told sort of like that your ovaries don't work, they're not responding to your hormones, and the phrase POI was never said to me. The phrase premature menopause was never said to me. And I don't know if that's because of my age, where they didn't really want to put that on me. For years, I would say from the ages of 15 to 21, I didn't really know what was going on. And I remember sitting Googling, trying to figure out what it was that I had, you know, ovaries don't work, and there was nothing. And I genuinely thought I was the only person in the country with the condition, because I was kind of told by my specialist, you know, that it's a really rare thing to happen and this doesn't happen that often. And I genuinely believed I was the only person in the country with it. And then when I was 21, I was like, I'm going to do some more research into this to kind of find out what actually it is. And just through my own Googling, I suppose, and sort of typing in some of the buzzwords that my doctor had sort of said to me, I came across Daisy Network. And from that moment, my whole outlook on the condition changed completely, because I realized, God, I'm far from the only woman in the country with it. There's loads of us, and people that had had the exact same experience to me, people who had, you know, gone through it at different ages. And yeah, it was literally just like a light bulb moment, thinking like, God, this is what I've got. This all makes sense. So yeah, I started to, you know, I just sent them a message and said, you know, is there anything I can do to help out, to volunteer? And that's what I started doing. And I started volunteering and running their social media accounts is what I first did, and answering just some emails and things. And just sort of through that, I just got more and more involved. As a charity, really, what we do is just offer a place for women with this diagnosis to find other people that know what they're going through.
It's really astounding, isn't it, though, that your doctor didn't give you any kind of toolkit to go away with, you know, even just there's a website, there's a charity called the Daisy Network,
yeah,
you know, anything. And I understand when your doctor said this is very rare, 15, 16, you know, that's probably the rarer end of it, but you are definitely by no means alone. Why do you think it is that our bodies and our reproductive functions, our femaleness when it comes to medical things, it's just, there's just this incredible silence and ignorance on the part of the professionals, and then obviously on our part, because they don't tell us anything. Why do you think that is?
That's one of the main frustrations of Daisy Network, and the previous chairs who I took over from are still a massive part of Daisy, and they are POI specialist, you know, gynecologists, and that's one of their main passions and main frustrations, is to try and get the medical community to understand more about it, you know. And during GP training, for example, they get a minute bit of training on menopause, and that's it. So I do think it's just lack of education. And also, I feel like we aren't educated enough about our own bodies, I suppose, because, you know, you get told this is how you don't get pregnant, but you never get told, you know, what happens when you go through menopause. You never find out what happens if you can't get pregnant. So I think it's lack of education all around.
I didn't even know the difference between estrogen and progesterone until I started doing this podcast. Yeah. And I'd been doing lots of digging and looking, you know, I had to find all my own menopause stuff out. Still in 2021, so swept under the carpet. So you're 30 now, yeah, and you've had longer to digest and get used to living with POI, and you're in a relationship.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about whether or not to have kids, and how that might work, and how that might happen, and whether it's important that it's biological or...
The biological side, for me, again, I think because I found out so young, I've had such a long time to process it. And I've kind of known that is, you know, that's come to not be an important thing for me, because it's taken a lot of thinking about it and sitting on it, and a lot of conversations. So at this present moment, I don't know. I still don't know. I still don't know what I want. Do I want a family? Yeah, yes, I do. What form will that take? I don't know. Whether I go down the egg donation route, I'm humming and hawing about that, whether I do that. Adoption is probably the thing that I would probably do most likely, I think. It's funny, even before I had this POI diagnosis, that was something in my head that I always thought, I'm always going to adopt. Even if I have my own child, I'm always going to adopt. So that's something that's always been in my head as something that I want to do. I'm 30. People around me are having babies and having children easily. It's not easy for me sometimes. It does trigger me a lot and makes me realize of how it's going to be more difficult for me. But do I have a decision yet of what that looks like for me? No, I don't. I think part of the problem is because you've already had this one choice taken away from you, I put a lot of brain energy into looking at all of my other options. So I don't have the option for, you know, just a natural falling pregnant. Yeah, I put a lot of energy into, you know, pros and cons of each one and what do I actually want out of my life? And the answer is, I still don't know.
You know, you've been with your partner 6 years, is that right?
Yeah. Mm.
So is that a conversation you have to have fairly early on in that kind of dating game or, you know, almost terrify a man to mention babies at all? Never mind, you know, whether you can or can't have them. Yeah. But obviously, did you feel sort of duty bound to have that conversation very early?
Yeah, I think I did. And it wasn't really a case of sit down, I've got something to tell you kind of thing, which I know a lot, you know, through the Daisy Network, I know that's what some people did. I didn't do that. My way of coping with things is through humor. So I would just drop in like stupid quips about my broken ovaries all of the time. And then it got to the point where actually it was like, oh yeah, I probably should tell you like a bit more about that. So yeah,
I love that. He's like, she's obsessed with the ovary.
Yeah,
jokes.
She's obsessed with her ovaries. Yeah. And I think because I was taking sort of medication and, you know, I never hid that. I was always like, yeah, I've got to take this medication, you know, for my broken ovaries. And I think because he's just so laid back and chilled out, he's kind of like, all right, okay. And he wasn't really fazed by it at all. But it is something that I think I felt like I did have to address just because, you know, it's part of who I am, you know, it's part of my story. It was more for that, sort of in the vein of kind of being honest. You know, if that was going to scare somebody off, well, then that's their problem. That was my kind of attitude, you know. If they're going to run away once I've told them that, well, then that's their problem, not mine.
In your experience of the Daisy Network, the women hit hardest by this. Are they the ones that have left it till they're sort of, you know, 38, 39, thinking, I'm going to start my family, you know, I've had my career, now's the right time. And then they discover, you know, that they have POI.
Yes.
What are the different stories, I suppose, with people from the Daisy Network?
It's hard to kind of categorize who it's harder because it can hit everybody, you know, at whatever age. People handle it totally differently. But you're right, you know, there is women that have found out because they've decided just to come off the pill to give their body a rest from taking hormones and nothing's ever started again. There has been women that exactly that at that point of desperation of trying to get pregnant and nothing's happening and then finding out that actually that's not going to be a possibility for you. That can be a really hard thing to deal with because for a lot of these women, you know, they've had no signs of it beforehand because the pill masks a lot of these symptoms. So they're completely unaware, you know, they've been taking the pill to stop themselves getting pregnant, not knowing how long actually their ovaries haven't really been working. But then again, there is the women that suddenly start getting these horrendous menopausal symptoms, hot flushes, anxiety, depression, and go to the doctors. And often, again, it's just put down to kind of life stresses or, you know, oh, it's hormonal fluctuations, that's normal, or irregular periods. And actually, we've found that quite a lot of women have had to push and push and push to get this diagnosis because they know something's not right. And yeah, so there is a huge variety of stories, and there's women as well that were prepared to go through it because of that, because of you know, cancer treatments, or they've had to get a hysterectomy for some reason, so they've been prepared to go through menopause at a younger age. Again, still doesn't make it any easier. Doing those things such as cancer treatment or hysterectomy, you get plummeted into a really strong menopause because you've gone from having your hormones to having none at all. So that can be when you get the really horrendous symptoms. So I think really no matter what age, no matter what story or how you've got there, I think the overriding feeling is the same. And I think one part of it is the fertility side of things. But that's just one part of it. You know, it's a whole body and mind diagnosis, really.
you're on HRT now, and of course you're on HRT because you're only 30 and, you know, you really need those hormones. Have you thought about the future? I mean, most of us don't think about our menopause until we've got, like, we're five symptoms in and we think we've gone mad because we can't remember anything and we're really anxious, and, you know, then the penny drops. And part of most of that is because we're so poorly educated. But you've obviously got all this time now to think about what you might want to do with your hormones and HRT. And what are you thinking?
I think for me, HRT has been, it's been a journey. I've had various types of HRT. I've had to have levels adjusted. At the moment, I'm currently going through adjusting my levels and adding gels into my tablet. So it has been an ongoing process, you know, of trying to get the right levels for my body. And I personally think, because, you know, if HRT works for me, would I come off it when I hit 50? Possibly not, possibly stay on it for longer. And I think that's what they said, you know, there isn't really any reason to come off it. And I think that's one of the myths that people think, you know, I get to a certain age, I've got to come off HRT. Well, that's not the case. So again, because my process with HRT has not really been streamlined, it's one of those things that I've just got to take sort of step by step and see what comes. You know, I'm on a HRT sort of concoction at the moment that works for me. Will this continue to work for me? Possibly not. Will I have to change it up? Probably yes. So it's one of those things that I just have to take step by step, I think.
What would you say are some positive changes that might have come into your life through this? Of course, it's a sliding doors moment. You can't know what would have happened if you'd just been like your older sister. Yeah. But what do you think, what path are you on now that you maybe wouldn't have been on? What kind of good things have come to you from this?
Yeah, I mean, my work with Daisy Network has just been a complete sort of life change and a passion project, and something that I just feel so passionately for. And the team we've got is amazing. And, you know, just being able to help other people in the same situation that I was in has been just an amazing all-round experience. You know, I got crippling anxiety with this diagnosis, so working through that, I had therapy, and that completely changed my outlook on life, because for years, from about 16 to 21, I couldn't enjoy myself for those years because the anxiety was so bad and I was consumed with this POI diagnosis, that coming out the other side of that really changed my outlook on everything. I genuinely think that for me now, no matter what it is, as long as it's making you happy, that's what is important. And I think that's really what it's shown me. And also, I'm currently training to be a therapist. I'm in my final year of my therapist training. And that's purely because of this diagnosis and going through therapy myself. And I'm only on the path I am now because of the experiences I went through. And I think my outlook on life is just totally different to it would have been.
Well, that was an even more exciting positive answer than I was hoping for. That's great that you're training to be a therapist.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for coming on the show today. Thank you for talking about the Daisy Network. Well done for all the good work you do. And yeah, if anyone's listening to this now and has any inkling or idea that something's not right, the Daisy Network is a great place to go.
We're here for anybody, even if you've just got a question, you know, whether you're wondering whether it's POI that you've got, you know, you can drop us a message and we'll be happy to help you through it. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Amy. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That was Amy Benny, chairperson of the Daisy Network. And you can find out more about POI on their website, daisynetwork.org. Next week, we'll be talking to author Pat Duckworth about menopause in the workplace.
I'm going faster. I'm not going slower. I'm going faster. And it is that kind of boost when you're not going through monthly cycles and the mood swings and everything else. Once you're free from that and you're on the other side of it, your time's your own. You know, you can do what you want.
And if you'd like to hear more, you can follow On My Last Eggs with new episodes released every Monday from Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get yours. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and on Twitter. Do send a message. We'd love to hear from you. Have a great week.